Sippers, welcome to this episode of the Tea With Me podcast with me, your wee mate Shane Todd. Few things to get into before we get into the nuts and bolts of this episode. Number one is Mythsteries, the brand new comedy history podcast from myself and Dr. Kieran Bartlett. We've been putting this out in Patreon for a while. There's quite a lot of episodes on there. It's gone public. We've put it on the stock market. Buy, buy, sell, sell. This is a lot of fun. Even if you're not into history, it's great. We look at big historical subjects and decide whether they're hit or myth. Did they happen? Did they not happen? Is it somewhere in between? There's episodes on Julius Caesar. There's episodes on the lost city of Atlantis. Michael, what else? What else? Too long. There's loads of episodes on there. Robert De Bruce. Okay. We are doing the SSE Arena. Tea With Me is coming to the SSE Arena. There's going to be 6,000 sippers there. At this point of recording, we released the last batch of tickets. I don't know if there will be some left by the time this episode comes out, but if there are, you can go on Ticketmaster, SSE website, check out the description for this. I am on tour doing stand-up everywhere. I'm doing the UK, Ireland. By this point, I think my dates will be out for Australia, New Zealand, Canada, America, and the Middle East. There's one Middle East date. It sounds like I'm doing loads. I'm just doing Dubai. That's ShaneTalkComedy.com, which is also in the description. We are sponsored by none other than Manscaped. What's going on with your balls, my friend? Everything okay down there? Manscaped, you need to go and just check. See, if you think everything's all right down there and you're not a Manscaped user, go to Manscaped.com and see what it's all about. These guys have everything. They're nuts, literally. They've got, what am I looking at here? What products are on the shelves? Ball deodorant, and then just deodorant. And that's actually just deodorant. Beard oil, beard balm, clear groin shaving gel. Ball toner. They've got this beard trimmer here. They've got a brush. Is that a beard brush, Michael, is it? These guys are wild. There's everything. Crop preserver. They do cologne. They do my favorite product, which is the Lawnmower 4.0. Wireless technology. Wireless what, Michael? Wireless charging technology. WCT. They've got it all. Go to manscaped.com. Use the code TWITHME for 20% off and free shipping. The link's in the description. They put a lot of stuff together, packages together, so you can bulk buy some of this stuff and it'll change your life. It'll change your balls. Change your marriage. My guest today is someone I've wanted on the podcast for a long time, but very selfishly, he plays all around the world, so he's not often here. Thankfully, he's doing some shows at the Waterfront Hall at the minute with the Ulster Orchestra that are happening this weekend, so we've managed to get him, which I'm absolutely delighted about. I'm a huge fan of this guy and his music, and I just love that he's from here, and he's an artist who has spread his wings all over the world. He's collaborated with some of the biggest names in music, and he has a backlog of phenomenal, phenomenal work. If you're a fan of Foy Vance, you're not just a fan of his music. It's more than that. His songwriting is so good, and then he has just the best voice as well. And it's just if you are one of the few people, I'm sure, like that likes the podcast that has not yet checked out Foy Vance, you need to do that. He is huge and just a very original, great artist. And you can tell I'm a massive fan. I tell him that in the episode. I fill up a wee bit in the episode. We sort of get deep about a few things and I get to hear more about his backstory and just what he's all about. A great guy, a great guest. This absolutely lived up to my expectations. And I really wish I was going to see his shows this weekend, but I'm in the Moy tonight. You got to take care of business. Ladies and gentlemen, sippers, please enjoy this episode of the Tea With Me podcast with the one and only Foy Vance. There's a question I always ask guests at the start, and then I've stopped doing it for ages, but I want to bring it back. The podcast is Tea With Me. Are you a tea drinker?
I like tea for sure, but more coffee.
But then you travel a lot, so did you have to sort of accept that when you travel the world a bit more, the tea wouldn't be the same? If you get me.
I used to travel with tea bags, would you believe?
Right.
But that's going back a long way.
Wee sandwich fact, bag or something like that.
Do you know what? I actually, it was leaves I had, Assam. It was an it was an Assam. What was the blend I had? I like the blend of Assam and English breakfast, I think it was. And then I got mad into Lapsang Soochung. Have you ever had that? Like a real smoke. It's kind of like the Laphroaig of teas.
So I'll be honest, I knew a lot about tea. And in the last 20 seconds, I realised I don't. And I'm just Punjana. You know what I mean? I'm not into I haven't broadened my tea horizons really, but that all sounds great. But I do that thing now where I travel with tea bags, and then wherever you are in the world, they're selling it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, they sell the Irish and all those kind of teas.
Is it Punjana for the taste? Or why Punjana? Is it just because it sounds like a euphemism? Makes you feel?
It's just familiarity, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's what keeps me, you know, my rider on tour is tea, almond milk and water.
Yeah.
That's it. What's on your rider?
Do you know what? At the minute, a lot of zero beers. I'm off the drink.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of zero beers just to make me feel like I'm still drinking.
Right. How's that changed? Like, has it changed the shows in any way? Like the way you feel on stage? Or would you have had a couple of beers on stage and before? And
Yeah. Right. That was the problem.
Right.
That was the problem. We did on the tour that I did before this, my manager had me sign an agreement, and everyone on the team signed a contract saying no alcohol before the show, but then I would have made up for it after the show.
Right.
Was the problem. So then the next day I'd have been hanging.
Right.
I guess the difference is in the shows, I don't know, you'd need to ask the folks that come along. I guess I'm a lot less obstreperous.
Well, I don't know what that means. I'm so sorry.
Just a bit of, I'm less of a fucker.
Right, I get that. That's the Oxford dictionary.
Yeah, I think it is. If you look up obstreperous in the dictionary, it just says wee fucker.
Right, yeah. I'm really nervous about this. I never get nervous doing these episodes, but I'm a massive, I'll not play cool, I'm a massive, massive fan.
Right,
of yours and have been since. I even remember I used to do some stuff with ATL, like Cross the Line, back in the day for Radio Ulster. I would have reviewed gigs. It was big in the local music, and you did a cover of, maybe you can tell me how long ago this was, Crosstown Traffic by Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, holy shit, that's going back to, I used to cover that when I was opening up for Bonnie Raitt, so that's,
I was an obstreperous length of time ago. I don't know if I've used that right.
When in Rome.
Yeah. But I remember you did that, and I heard that on radio, and ever since I've been big into your music.
Oh,
and then I found out you were you're a fellow North Down guy.
Yeah.
You're from Bangor because you know, if you were to listen to your music and your voice, you know, it's like when you discover someone's from here that you don't expect to be from here based on their voice and their style of music. It's great to know that you're just from up the road.
Can you not hear it in my songs? According to Kieran Bartlett, you can hear that in my songs every now and then.
What's he been saying? Fuck Kieran Bartlett. What's he been saying?
Never mind. Huh?
Let's go up to his studio and fuck it up. It's upstairs. Let's wreck it on him.
Let's go piss on his sofa.
Do you know what that's a bit far, but let's loosen his chairs. He's at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival at the minute, so when he comes back on, he fall.
There you go.
No, Kieran Bartlett, honestly, terrible guy. Some very extreme political views that I don't want to go into, but not good. Yeah, but I suppose it was because, you know, I was hearing this music and I was like, who is this guy? And then I remember Googling you back in the day and I said, he's from Bangor. Mm. And
where are you from?
Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
And Hollywood and Bangor have that wee sort of middle class rivalry. You know, we're rivals, but if it came to an all-out town war in Northern Ireland,
I would be out with our pea shooters.
We'd pair up, yeah, yeah.
And conkers.
Yeah.
We'd come out with our conkers, yeah. I'd show you.
Well, we'd send our butlers. But you know, Hollywood and Bangor, there's a wee bit of a, maybe it's because I played football back, there was always a wee bit of a rivalry. But I gotta say, the song Bangor Town almost makes me, I'm like, I feel that, you know. Yeah. I wish we could do a remix and make it Hollywood Town, but
well,
that's weirdly a song that I don't know whether what you've done with the background of the song, but I feel like I can feel the place in the song.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't know if this is weird, but you know, if you go round the corner from McKee Clock?
Yeah.
Towards maybe where the Salty Dog is?
Aye, Seacliff Road, yeah.
In my head, you're singing it there.
That's weird that you would say that. Honest to God, that's where I am in my head when I'm singing it. So maybe that comes across.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's where I would go to that. I would spend a lot of time in those rocks growing up.
And then when you mentioned Fieldy's Bar in it.
Yeah.
Because I've always liked that song. Then I did a I think it was earlier this year, I did a world tour of Bangor. I did 4 gigs in one night in Bangor.
Love that.
I did Fieldies, the back bar of Fieldies.
Yeah, I love it.
And I loved it. There was the connection for that song. So you grew up in, what part of Bangor did you grow up?
Bloomfield Estate, for the most part.
Right.
Yeah.
And when did you, like, leave? Because I don't know much about, like, your backstory. I just know you're from Bangor and then see that you're traveling the world, playing music, collaborating with some huge people, and so many of my friends are fans, but I don't know what that, where that in between bit is of, like, how you got into the business. And
am I in the business? I still don't feel like I'm. My manager's in the business.
Right, yeah.
I just write the songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, grew up in Bangor for the most part. When I was about 1, we moved out to the States. My dad was a preacher. I'm giving you the full story.
Yeah, I want it. Because I don't know it.
Yeah, he was a preacher for the Church of Christ and moved us out to Canton, Oklahoma. Spent a few years there, came back, grew up in Clonleyboy in Bangor, and then moved to Bloomfield Estate. That was the formative years, you know.
Did your music influences, like the fact your music is very soulful, and yeah, it sounds like, I grew up listening to a lot of, like, Motown.
Uh-huh.
My dad had, like, I think 3 cassette tapes in the car at all times, the same 3. And it was like Motown taped off the radio. So I love, like, soul music. I love music like that. And your music, a lot of your music feels like that to me, like very soulful. So did the influences of that come from maybe when you were in America in those early years? Like,
do you know what? I think so. You know that saying, give me the boy to the age of 7 and I'll give you the man. I think a lot happens in those formative years that you don't, you know, you can't even put your finger on. I think being exposed to gospel music in that way definitely had a larger impact on me than I even realized until way later on. I was kind of lucky in the sense, musically, in the sense that, well, there was that church music. My dad was Church of Christ, so they don't allow instruments, because that's, you're going to hell if you play an instrument, apparently.
Oh yeah,
I don't know what the fuck that's about, but there you go. Horses for courses. It was kind of cool though, because then what would happen was people would find their parts, you know, so like the there was always incredible singing
right
going on. So I had that, and then I have 3 older brothers, and the eldest brother, Easton, he was an avid collector. He had everything from Michael Jackson to Meatloaf and everything in between. Just the other brother, Colin, he was into The Who and The Jam, but also like old trucker music. He had an old 8-track player. Do you know what an 8-track is?
No, I don't even know what that is.
It's like a cassette thing, but a huge big cassette. He had one of those, and they're all like trucker music, Chris Christopherson, all that kind of stuff. And then the next brother down, Paul, he was into the Exploited and the Damned and the Clash and the Sex Pistols. And so the house was awash with all that. My mum was into like 50s, 60s, like crooner music and all. But it all sounded like music to me, I guess. You know, it all sounded incredible to me, like another world. Felt like somewhere to escape to.
Yeah. When you came back from America, did you have an American accent?
I did, yeah.
And how did that go down in Bangor?
Well, I lost it pretty quick because I was 5.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, candy very quickly became sweet, so you were getting clipped.
Yeah.
The fuck do you mean, candy? Stick your candy up your hole, man.
When you were around that period where I would have started listening to you, like when you were doing stuff for Across the Line and that sort of thing, I feel like, and I maybe don't know, but I feel like it seemed to me you were in America more than you were here. Like your music maybe took you away from here. What was there, like a reason for that, or a moment where you decided to travel more? And
Well, I mean, you have to travel, don't you?
So were you on the scene here? Were you maybe doing pubs and things like
that? Yeah, I was doing the pub circuit. And I would try and sort of wedge my own songs in to as many sets as I could, and set up original nights. But and I did sort of do the singer songwriter night here for a while. And
Did you ever gig here in Hollywood?
I played here in Hollywood. I played in the Priory.
Is it open
still?
No, it's been going for years.
Yeah, I played in the Priory a lot. Where else did I play? I played the Dirty Duck down by the shore.
Oh,
did there a lot.
See, So my dad used to go to the Dock every Friday night with his mates. And when I got a bit older, I would go down and meet them for a drink. And they used to have downstairs on a Friday some amazing bands and singers on. It was brilliant. It was a great wee room for stand-up.
Yeah.
Or for music, sorry.
I was just rolling with you.
But it was great. So I kind of didn't even realise that you were on the scene here. I thought you'd established yourself.
Well, I suppose it did with regards to, you know, doing my own thing, my own songs. It was a mixture of the two. I kind of felt like, and it was nothing to do with here. It was more to do with me and my mindset. It was hard to go and do the pub circuit, and then you know, suddenly turn around and try and charge people to come and see me do my own songs. It just didn't weigh up. So I stopped playing for a long time and just was working on a coffee place. We were importing coffee, because I felt like I need a break from when I play music. I just want to play my own stuff, and that's it. And the opportunities for that were further afield. You know, I think it's, you know what's blessing and curse about this place as a creative is that there's no really founded music industry infrastructure.
Yeah,
it's not, you know, it's not really established here. And that's great in the sense that it's like, you know, if you cut out light from flowers, they're going to stretch further, get brighter colors, you know, just to get themselves seen type thing. I think that happens creatively here because of a sort of lack of infrastructure. People work a bit harder. That's why the place is rife with talent, you know.
Well, I think exactly the same thing with stand-up, but more recently that happened.
That's an explosion of stand-up at the minute.
It's because there was no real kind of support for it, you know.
Yeah.
People would talk about the great performing arts that we have here, like music, the actors that we have, all that kind of thing, and stand-up was always like really ignored. So we just had to do it ourselves, you know. There was no, maybe like you're talking about, there was no path, there was no, you do this venue and then you move up to do this and we help you do this. You just had to take a punt. And I remember doing Mandela, putting on a show in Mandela Hall when I was like a kid, and mates of mine who would have always supported me, other comedians, being like, you're mental for, you know, what if no one shows up? But we all just gave it a go. And
did people show up?
People showed up, yeah. Yeah.
You sell it out?
No, seven people, but it sold it out.
Start. We all got to start somewhere.
Yeah, sold it out. And and I feel like ever since then, everyone's just have a DIY attitude towards it. And I think that's why there is the explosion of stand-up, because audiences are going, these guys are just, they're doing it themselves. You know, they're independent. There's nothing like this. It's really gone before them in terms of the scale of the gigs. And I think that's why there's a boom for stand-up now. Like there would have been for music maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago. You know, local, when I was doing things with ATL and really into my local music, everywhere, like bands like General Fiasco, Two Door Cinema Club were kind of coming up then.
Yeah.
And now I feel like it's stand-up's turn.
Yeah.
Which is, and there, I can't, people ask why stand-up booming so much, but I don't know if there's a reason for it. I think it's just,
people like to laugh.
Yeah, true.
You know?
Yeah. It just has blown up, and it has been people doing it for themselves.
And I'd be surprised if you don't have to at some point yourselves reach out and go further afield. I mean, you're already doing it.
I'm trying to do it. You know what I mean?
You're already doing it. And I think that's the thing. I mean, because it's such a small place, you sort of hit the ceiling pretty quick. If you can sell 5,000 tickets, you're not going to be able to do that gig every month.
Yeah, and
you're not going to be able to have that residency.
You want to challenge yourself.
Yeah.
Can I do it elsewhere?
Yeah.
Where did you move into for the first time? Was it over to England, or where did you do your first gigs outside of here?
Yeah, it was mostly kind of UK, Europe. I moved over there just to be closer to what was happening, because all the, you know, any tours that were coming through were, you know, always going through the mainland.
Were you trying to like jump on to maybe support people?
That was 100% what I was trying to do. I lucked out early on. I got on a sport tour with Bonnie Raitt, and being on tour with Bonnie Raitt was an eye opener. It helped me cultivate my own ideas for how I want to operate moving forward. Because she wasn't on the cover of magazines. She wasn't on the breakfast TV show. She wasn't on breakfast radio show. She wasn't. You didn't open the paper and see the adverts for her. And yet every gig we went to was sold out with people who were, you know, completely invested in her as an artist.
And coming year on year.
And it was just like, there you go, that's it. Like, she's cultivated the relationship between her and her audience directly.
Yep.
And I thought, well, that's the way to do it. And the only way to do that is to get in front of people. So, I mean, by the time I was releasing my first album, I was 32. You know what I mean?
Is that
a baldy white Irishman? Yeah. You know, singing about cancer and heartache. Who the fuck wants to hear that?
Yeah.
Labels, no one was interested. Right. No one was interested. My only hope was to kind of go out and play live and hope that, you know, if I figured. I set up my own record label at the time called Word of Mouth, because my thinking was, if I'm any good, then people will tell other people, and then when I come back, there'll be more people than there were the first time. And if I'm not, well, then lesson learned.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'll go back home and start importing coffee again. Call Russell here. Is that job still going? You know, just keep going. Get in front of people. So I supported Bonnie, Taj Mahal, Buddy Guy, Tori Amos, kind of, just a very wide variety. Joss Stone, like anyone that wanted an opener, I would go and open, because I was thinking, well,
I'm still doing that right now. I love that.
Isn't it killer? Because it's someone else's audience.
Exactly. Any of the American comedians that are coming over here, which partly because of the boom of local stand up, international acts are, yeah. Well, let's check out Belfast. And last year Kevin Hart did shows over here, so that's made them all go, oh, let's do this.
Where'd he play the SSE?
We did 24 shows in the Limelight and Lavery's. He was over. I swear, I mean, any opportunity to talk
24
about this.
Shows and
24. He was overshooting a Netflix movie for 3 months. Someone phoned me. We have the same agent, but I feel like we're at different priority levels.
What makes you think that? Is it because you're white?
So they said, they go, listen, Kevin Hart's coming over to shoot a movie for Netflix for 3 months in Belfast. He might want to do a gig when he's over here. Would you be interested in doing the gig with him? I said, we'll see. Ask me another time. I said, I'll do whatever. I'll do his laundry if he wants. I'll make him his dinner, whatever. You know, I was like, he can come to my granny's house for Sunday dinner, and she died years ago, but I was just panicked.
Has anyone got a granny?
And they said, you know, it was like the big boss American agent who's not even my agent. He goes, you're going to be Kevin's Belfast best friend. I was like, this is unbelievable.
Wow.
So we thought he wanted to do one show. So he did the, I think it was Lavery's, middle floor in Lavery's.
What is that hold? Like 100 people?
100 people. Because he was testing out his new show for to record a special. So I opened for him. And then the next, the night after, his manager said to my promoter, we'll do another one next week. We did 20. His residency was basically in the small room of the Limelight there too. And I would do 15 minutes before him. And then we finished it off with, we did 22 of those, I think. And then we finished off with 3 Arena in Dublin, SSE in Belfast.
Wow.
And you're talking about, you know, watching her on tour and seeing, like, that's the way I want to operate.
Uh-huh.
Every night I was like, I'll watch his first few shows, and then after my support, I'll probably just head home. My kids are really young, so I was like, I'll go home. I watched every single show just to see how that progressed from the first show we did to then see how he does it at the arena.
Well, they call that taking class.
Right. That's exactly what it was. It was I almost wasn't laughing because I was just watching way he moved, the way he handled the microphone, all of it.
Uh-huh.
And it was the best education. And you know, there's some performers, I'm sure, music and comedy, who would go, you know, I'm sort of past opening for people. I don't want to do it. I just want to do my own shows. I can't see why you wouldn't want. It's so fun.
Yeah.
You know, there's no pressure on you. You're going out. I fucked up his intro. I've told the story in podcast before, but as a performer, I think you'll appreciate this. Get to the very end. We're doing 3 Arena in Dublin, sold out, 10,000-11,000 people. And the way it worked with all the Belfast shows was I would roughly do 15 minutes. So when I arrived at the venue and started my set, him and his team would arrive through another door. I never met him. Like, you're going to be Kevin's Belfast best mates. 22 shows, I never met him. Because he would arrive when I was on through a different door. I was basically a human decoy, right? So that he didn't get mobbed going in. And then when he was ready to go on stage, someone would flash me with a torch from the side. So I've booked for 15 minutes, but that might be 10 minutes or 14 or 25. Oh. I just had to keep going right. and then wrap up what I was on. But they were dead on. They would say, finish what you're on, which was good because you don't want to stop a joke halfway through. Anyway, did all that and it went smooth. And then we're doing Dublin and I'm pretty nervous, obviously. It was the biggest gig I'd ever done in my life. And I go out, my mate Colin's on the bill as well. He does his set, then it's me, and then I have to bring Kevin on. Biggest moment of my life. Like, and because it was a different promoter, because it was in Dublin, I assume we were doing the same system. So I booked to do 20 minutes. So at like 19:30, 19:40, I've done the punchline to my bit. It goes over, and I'm like, right, happy days. That's 20 minutes. And I looked at the side of the stage, and there's no one going, like, fill more time. So I'm like, happy days. I go, ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the man you're here to see? Oh, no. Everyone, ah! I said, please welcome to the stage, the one and only Kevin Hart. Now, some nights in the Belfast shows, he'd come on and shake my hand, we'd do a wee hug. Some nights he would wait till I'd left and he'd come on.
Who you were.
Yeah, he's like, he's like, are you the
David
tech?
David Todd, everybody, David
Todd. He's like, so this night in Dublin, I introed him, and Tony over there was there with me. So his music hits and all the lights go up. He hadn't come on, so I thought, he's going to wait for me to walk off. I go, you know what? Give this one to Kev. He wants a stage to himself. It's Kev's night. So I walk off, and he wasn't there.
Oh, no.
And the whole backstage area in the wings, there's just 20 people doing this. And he was nowhere to be seen. And the music's playing, and the crowd have stopped applauding and cheering. And I went, do you want me to go back out when he wasn't ready to come on? Oh. I was like, but I had no way of knowing.
My toes are curling.
We waited about 2 minutes. And then they went, go and introduce him again. And he arrives down, tucking his shirt in. He was just getting dressed. And I had to go back out and go, ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Hart. And I thought, I'm done. I was like, the agents are going to drop me. I'll not get to do Belfast the next night, the SSE Arena. And I can understand why I fucked up his intro at an arena show. It was never mentioned again, bar his tour manager from America who just came over for the arena show said to me before Belfast, he went, you the guy bringing him on? I said, yeah. He said, once is a mistake, twice is a habit. And I went, okay. And then I nailed it for Belfast and all was good. But it was never mentioned.
That's a good saying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Once is a mistake, twice is a habit.
Yeah, it made me go all scared and all. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, mister.
Yeah.
He's younger than me. I was like, I'm so sorry, mate.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be talked on. That night, everyone's like, don't worry, it's fine. I couldn't be talked on.
I know.
It was the most. Have you had like a problem on stage with like a tech pro? Anything you.
Well, yeah. I'm trying to think of.
See, I feel like it's more difficult for a musician because I can talk about, well, I guess you can too, but I mean, yeah. I can make a joke about it and that kind of thing, but.
Well, I would often do that if things go all right, you know, just kind of talk shit about it for a minute and try and get out of it, try and charm them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that kind of stuff happens. I can't think of anything that I can say on air.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Maybe with the 0% beers now, they're going to be less.
Yeah, there'll be less of that.
Less mishaps
sure.
and that kind of thing.
It's more kind of things that I've said on stage. That's the first things that come to mind are things that I remember the night that I said that.
Probably when you were starting, and even when I was starting, whatever you say on stage is not a problem because there's no one has the phones out.
Yeah,
but now everybody at the concert has the phone out. That was one thing in that tour that amazed me. They made you check your phone into a magnetic envelope.
Yeah,
so no one had the phones out.
Love that.
Do you see that more and more, that people have the phones out?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, but that's been the way for a decade. You know, if not longer. It was a strange change. Initially, I used to kind of say, here, keep your phones in your by your side and don't you know, be here, be present, be on your phone, don't be watching the gig like that.
Yes.
And then realized it was a diminishing return, you know, people just think you're a fussy bastard and
right.
I guess, yeah, I probably was just being a fussy bastard, but at the same time you're trying to say, no, this is for you.
Yeah, if any of us could pick, we would want the phones away because
yeah, be here. Be
you're
here.
You're not present.
Me.
You may as well be at home
watching
if you're watching it through the phone.
Especially with a gig. I mean, at least with a film and a comedian, it's going to come across the same.
Yeah.
But a song?
Yes. Yeah.
It's going to sound like shit.
You've made music videos for these songs. They're better than someone's recording from the back of the SSC.
Just put your phone away. And
yeah. Do you get like, heckled at shows? Like, would you, do you hear things being shouted out, or with everything that's going on and the band and that kind of thing, do you not hear?
No, I hear it, yeah.
Anything thrown you off?
I'm sure.
Because I imagine you probably have people, when you're gigging in all around the world, there's probably always at least a few people in from home, from here.
Oh, aye.
That have come to see you. So do you hear those, you know?
Aye, but it's usually just some old bullshit, you know, like, I know your cousin! Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do
nice
with that?
One. Yeah. So this next song is, yeah. You know, I don't know, what the, all right.
Yeah.
I'm from Bangor.
Yeah.
Good. That's yeah. Well done, you.
I had a guy every year at solo shows would shout, your dad nicked my lawnmower. Every
did
year.
Your dad actually like
probably he probably did. That's
did you never
thing.
Get like, to the bottom of it? I'd have wanted to get to the bottom
never
of it.
Got to the bottom of it. I said to my dad, he's like, probably might well have. Might have happened years ago or something. And I used to have a back and forth with him, and I'd wait. I'd be doing like the waterfront or something where you're playing this weekend, and I'm trying to relax, enjoy the show, and I'm like, this fucker's gonna any minute. Every year I'd have to come up with a new response for him, you know, to like to cut him down. Yeah. But he stopped, so I think my dad's maybe like gone and made it right, you know? Yeah. Be the B&Q and just sort
but
of
I
just
think
get it.
It's like shooting fish in a barrel, really, isn't it? And we've got a microphone and people, there's a room full of people that are paid to come and see you. I mean, you don't need to say much other than no one wants to fucking hear you, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, then that's the end of that.
What was the first gig you did outside of here? Was it over in England or did you go somewhere further afield?
I'm trying to think.
And also, did you have like musician mates from here who were also at the same time trying to break through as well and going away from here?
Maybe I did I don't know. I never I was always sort of just doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I know that I never really plugged into the scene as such. I mean, there's more of a scene now, more of a kind of collaborative scene. There has been over the last decade bands coming together, putting on their own events and all, helping each other out, playing each other's bands, all that kind of thing.
But you seem to have been doing that for a hell of a long time, like always being involved with other musicians and...
Yeah, well, that was... I had to kind of, you know, that was... I had to carve that out as a reality because it wasn't necessarily the way when I was first coming up. It was just singer-songwriter nights, every man for themselves. And I don't know if... I was talking about this last night at the show, like singer-songwriter nights, they can be the most fucking boring nights.
Right, yeah.
You know, just like where the intros of the songs are even longer than the songs.
Right,
itself.
Right.
You're thinking, like, just sing the fucking song. Like, is it, if it's not in the song, if we can't get it from the song, we're not going to get it from your intro.
Yes.
And everyone was just kind of, I don't know, on their own kind of band. So I guess I did the same. I just got myself out of Dodge. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be away. I don't know why I wanted to be away. I don't know if I thought it would be better to be away. Like most Irishmen, you know, we need to leave here before we realise what we've got right at our feet.
Yeah. So what age were you not living in Bangor then? What age were you, was it like in your 30s?
No. I got married at 23 and I moved to Lanzarote.
Oh, why?
Yeah, for a year. Yeah. Just to get away. Again, it was like the kind of, the plan was to, just get away from the playing six nights a week in the bars. I just went and played six nights a week in the bars over there.
Well, why not be in Lanzarote? If you're playing music six nights, why not make it in Lanzarote?
Yeah, I guess there was something about kind of going and then trying to spend the days writing and trying to, you know, trying to get under the hood of songs and all that. It didn't really work out that way, or it didn't work out the way I planned anyway.
There's not a lot happening in Lanzarote.
No, I got pretty good at surfing.
Right.
And bat and ball.
Oh, yeah.
You know, beach bat and ball with like a sort of squash ball in the back. I got pretty good at that.
Were you thinking then it was between that or music?
I was thinking, like, oh, well, how much money Olympics can I make as a bat and ball player? And there wasn't much in it.
Yeah, it doesn't translate, like you can't play badminton, you can't do tennis, just... Beach bat and ball.
Yeah.
Beach bat and ball's a lot of fun. You don't see anymore. You know the sticky pad?
Yeah.
Sticky pad and the tennis ball?
Yeah.
Like no matter what's going on in your life.
I like the one where you got to put it in your head. And you catch it. Have you not seen it? It's like Velcro around it and you catch it with your head.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you look like a right fucking bell end.
No. But it's yeah, like the ladies aren't watching that being like, that's a sexy bastard.
I know, look at it. Oh, jeez, he's fucking gorgeous, him, isn't he? I like the look of him.
There's no groupie scene.
No, there's no
for the bat and ball head guys, you know?
No. Head the balls. Right.
Yeah. Lanzarote. Yeah, I went to Lanzarote a few years ago with my dad for a lad's holiday, and there's not a lot going on.
No.
He's a big Tenerife guy, my dad, with Dennis, and then he tried Lanzarote. He's like, it's not happening. He likes to strip and play Las Americas in Tenerife.
He likes to strip and what?
No, he doesn't like to strip. Well, he does like to strip. He likes the strip in Playas Las Americas in Tenerife.
Oh, okay.
Big strip of bars and restaurants.
Yeah.
And it's all happening there. Can I ask you the meaning behind a song that I'm curious about?
Aye.
If Christopher Calls.
Uh-huh.
So that's a so we in the house, like, we listen to you a lot. And weirdly, like, part of the reason I'm like such a big fan is I was putting together a playlist. I DJ'd both of my kids being born in the delivery suite.
Yeah.
I DJ'd that. And my wife's like, you've plenty of jobs to do. And I went, I'm going to do one job and I'm going to nail it. Right. So I put the playlist together. I curated the playlist. And
I like it.
We put a lot of your music on there because it's my wife's a big fan too. So I feel a huge connection to your music because it reminds me of that. It reminds me of like my kids being born. Huh. And
does it remind you of your kids being made?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that.
Christopher.
Thank you. Thank God you said that because I was genuinely about to get emotional there. Really, there's songs on that that when they're on, they remind me of my kids being born.
Love
so,
that, man.
Especially Guiding Light. Like, there was from my first son. It was peak COVID times when he was born, so it was like the delivery room was crazy. There was a lot going on. And me and my wife both remember it through all the madness, that song kind of playing.
Wow.
So that always kind of makes me emotional, that song. And then today on the way to the pod, I had a playlist on, and that's when Christopher Calls is a song I really like, but I can't really work out what it's about.
Yeah. Look, it's a dark one, like. It's my second ex-wife, the second of the wives that I fucked up. It was her dad passed away. Fuck, this is dark. Is it all right?
No, yeah, look, if you're comfortable talking about it. I nearly burst into tears 20 seconds ago, so we're we're all good.
Well, you know what? It was like, I've always been fascinated with hope, the idea of hope, hence the first record being hope. Because hope's a heartbreaker. Like, when there's hope, when you have hope, when there is no hope, that's the greatest heartbreak of all, almost. And it was basically a situation like that where my ex-wife, her dad had passed. She called me and she was telling me what had happened. And when she was telling me about it, she was going, do you think he's passed? Do you think he's passed? And in my mind, I'm going, oh, aye. From what you're telling me, yeah, your dad's already gone. She was about to hop a cab and get over to the house and hopefully get there. And then she was like, oh, I better get off the phone, you know, in case he calls.
Right.
In case my mom calls back and he's all right.
Yeah.
And I remember just hanging up the phone and just thinking, I don't know, just that moment of like, you know, I didn't want to say, oh, darling, he's definitely gone.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of, I went down the hope road with her. It was like, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe get yourself a cab, maybe he'll call back. And then I thought that was so devastating, you know, like waiting for someone to call, it's just never gonna.
Yeah. It's an incredible song. And there's just it's crazy how a song can evoke so much, because there's so many songs in that playlist that I would literally like find myself like nearly filling up to, but it's because it's maybe not necessarily the words or it's the feeling that can give me in my soul about thinking about my kids. So that's why your music is very special to me, because it reminds me of that.
Thank you.
No problem.
And hey, you've hit on something there. I think I think this is in art in general, not just music. Music's a kind of an art form that sort of a lot of people understand, but it's in every art form that sort of transcendental quality. It's not just the joke. It's not just the layup of the joke. It's not just your physicality when you're telling a joke, which is a huge thing, yeah, right? Yeah. A punchline delivered with a different physicality is a different punchline altogether. All that kind of stuff. You've got all the composite parts that you got to think about. But then when you touch on that bit where all the composite parts become sort of irrelevant and this transcendental, this sort of subliminal, this other arena opens up,
yep,
that you can't describe. Yep. And to me, that's the point of music. It's like, if you could describe that, then there would be no need for art.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's art's job, is to kind of point to something beyond it all. That goes, that's the bit we're actually trying to portray, but it's...
Yeah.
Unportrayable, is that a word? I think I just made up a word.
I'm the last guy you should be asking. Because yeah, I didn't know what that word meant earlier, and you offered me £5 million to repeat that word. I wouldn't be able to. The one that we couldn't work out the definition.
I'll give you a fiver if you can repeat it.
No, I won't be able to. I don't know. I think I know about 36 words. And I've used them all. I'm out. The first song of yours that felt like more than a song to me was Indiscriminate Act of Kindness.
Mm.
Because when I remember the first time I heard that song, I almost played it like a... I almost saw like a music video for it in my head. So like the characters that you're singing about, I was almost picturing like a place for them and all that kind of thing. So, you know, it's great when music is just more than a song. And you like the sound of the song, but it means so much more. What is your favorite song of all of your songs?
Of my own?
Yeah. You have to have one that if you were, you know, if you got to play like a... What's funny to me is how modest you were about that. And if anyone asked me what's my favorite joke, I'd have an answer straight up. I'd be
Oh yeah.
I have a top 10. Like. Yeah. But if you were, you know, if you were asked to play, like maybe there was a radio show or a TV appearance that you really wanted to do, and they said like you got to play something for us. Is there a song of yours that you would jump to before the rest?
Probably just the last one I wrote.
Oh really?
Usually, yeah. Usually, I mean,
I suppose would that be the same as comedy in that? Because you feel like you're excited about it, so you think you'll deliver it, like...
Wherever, yeah, probably.
Because I have jokes that from back in the day that I know, like, are better than a lot of the other stuff, but I'm almost like, I'm over it, you know?
Yeah.
They're all, whereas the new stuff, there might be new jokes that aren't as good, but they're still, like, exciting to me, and... So,
do you think your new jokes aren't as good as your old jokes?
No, I think my new jokes are going to be as good
as
my old jokes.
That's not a good trajectory. You're on there.
No, but I mean, like, I have... Say, like, from the last tour... So, I'm at the minute, I'm doing work in progress shows.
Right.
So, I'm figuring all this stuff out. But I know that by the time I finished the last tour, there was bits that, to me, were that perfect for me.
Mm-hmm.
That I go, I know this is will get a laugh, but there's stuff I'm just trying out at the minute that... will be what I want it to be, but it just isn't there yet. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to do it because I love the figuring it out, because anything could happen while you're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, right.
You know, you could just deliver one word slightly differently and all of a sudden it's a great bit compared to what it was.
Do you know what? Comedy is it's an interesting thing to be doing now. And like, honestly, I'm more inspired by fighters and comedians
right
than I am by any artists around at the minute.
Okay.
To me, they're the two art forms that they're the last bastions of neck on the line.
Mm.
You know, like fighters, for instance, putting their very lives on the line.
Yeah.
You know, how much trust in your art form do you have to go on the cage when someone else is trying to take your head
off? Yeah,
I mean, that's... I think unless you're approaching your art like that, you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
And I think comedians as well, maybe not your lives, but your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like Shane McGillis.
Yeah, yeah.
Cancelled before he even got started.
Yes.
For being hilarious.
He's done the pub before. He's done the pub.
Was he?
Mm-hmm. It's with Zoom times where like you could get like, people were like, yes, because they could do it, you know, at home.
Yeah.
But he's done the pub before and we chatted about that. He was doing Saturday Night Live and there was an old podcast episode he'd done And yeah, I guess the cancel culture sort of movement
came
after him, and now he just did Vicar Street in Dublin last night, but he's huge. He's one of the biggest comedians in America now. I mean, I think if you overthink it when you're on stage, you wouldn't be funny because you'd be so worried, because anything I say can be taken wrong by anyone.
Yeah.
So there could be someone who comes up to me. It happened very rarely, but it happened. Someone could come up to me after the show. You know, I might have a bit, for talk's sake, I don't on this tour, but I might have a bit about getting into an argument with someone in a wheelchair over a parking space. That's a hypothetical situation. Someone could come up to me after and go, I didn't like that, offended me, you can't do that. But I'm saying, I can't then do any material, because anything could offend anyone, and I can't approach it like that. Nothing I do, I'm not a shock comedian, I don't have anything that tries to offend, but of course some of it's going to offend some people. But I don't think you can be, if you're worried about being cancelled and that kind of thing, it will get into your head.
All right.
It could happen at any, I don't do like a word for word script. I've never done that. I used to when I started, you know, like it was almost a monologue.
Right.
And now I have a beginning, middle and end for my jokes, but in between, anything could happen, because that excites me. I would hate to do the same show over and over again. Mm. I would get bored of it. Mm-hmm. So what I like at the minute is anything. I could say anything. I could definitely say, I have to go into every gig knowing that this could be my last gig.
Mm.
You know, it's that easy to say the wrong thing, but...
Oh, I find that, see, when I'm home, like last night I said some things that I got off stage and a couple of people were like, you shouldn't have said that about your ex-wife. But to me, it's like... Especially where we come from, I mean, it's like, it's the most offensive thing you can say sometimes, is the funniest, and it's not because people are, it's just like the thing that you shouldn't say.
Yeah, but you have to, if comedian's job is to make you laugh and find the funny in things that might not necessarily be laughing matter, that's the job description. And if you get it wrong and you make mistakes, well, we all make mistakes in our job, but if you were trying to make something funny, maybe you got it wrong, maybe it wasn't funny and it was offensive. You maybe have to hold your hands up and go, shit, I fucked up on that one. But it's now become, you make one mistake and you're done. There's no, I don't normally say this or anything like that.
Mm.
I don't know. But yeah, your job is to entertain the crowd. You're going to do that with whatever comes into your head.
Yeah, right.
And it's such a, and now that everyone has a mobile phone, it's such a...
I know, and some of the shit that comes into my head, I'm sure it's the same. The stuff I filtered last night was...
That's like people nowadays that go, you got a thought journal. And you're going, I can't write down the shit that's in. I can't have a written record.
Tourette's.
Yeah, I can't. This is evidence if I write this down, you know. This is going to be used to put me in the McGalbury, you know. I got to ask you about this. I've got massively into Yellowstone, the TV program at the minute.
Right.
We're about 8 or 9 episodes in. I love it, right? I bought a few, like, inspired clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I get around to wearing it, it won't be cool. Right. I'm buying a few outfits and going, did wear this in Yellowstone, and I'm remembering I live in Hollywood, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not rustling cattle, you know. But you've done a song with Luke
Grimes,
who is Casey in Yellowstone,
which
is so cool to me. And it's like, you know, when two worlds collide, and you're like, where's this come from? This is great. Like, that felt like a Truman Show moment for me, because I'm such a big fan of yours. I'm start watching Yellowstone. So I think I'm in a TV show and they've done this just as like a treat for me. You know what I mean?
We did.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yes, happy birthday.
That. So he, I saw on his Instagram, he's a big fan of yours.
Mm.
And he hadn't, correct me if I'm wrong, he hadn't put out music publicly or that kind of thing.
He hadn't, no.
And then he gets in touch with you and you guys make this song, which is fucking great.
Yeah, it was originally a mate of his, or a mutual friend, this guy Jeff, had hooked us up on text and whatnot, and we were meant to write, but it just never worked out. The stars never aligned. But then I wrote a song with a mate of mine, Elsie, that Hold On song.
Yeah.
And Luke heard it, loved it, and cut it. I was happy enough with that. I was like, well, there you go. We were texting each other back and forth. I was saying, there you go, mate. But at least I'm on the record in some shape or form, because we had hoped to write together. And we still will, please God. Then when he reached out to do the duet.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's excellent, because you sort of see that and you're like, you know, you can go, or, you know, he's Is it that he's on this TV show, so he thinks he's going to try music? You know, that could be like a terrible record. If you hadn't told me who it was, it's a fucking great, great song.
He's
beautifully sang.
Yeah, he's a great singer. You know who else is an incredible singer who I would love to do a record
Kevin
with?
Kevin Costner?
No, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Oh, you and Costner cutting an album? Me, you Call and Costner cutting an album? He watches.
I'm a big Costner. Fan of yours. Jimmy Marsden, James Marsden. You know
I just watched the courtroom thing with him. Have you seen this? Did you watch it? I
haven't seen it all, but it's fucking hilarious.
One of the best. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
So me, you, him are going to do a
track. Incredible singer.
He's in Hairspray.
Is he?
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but he's Quinny Collins in Hairspray in the remake. And
he's got one of those voices that levels a room. Right. And funny because he's such a chipper, dude. But then the only thing he only sings like sad, morose, dark songs. Right. You know.
So you and him going to work on something?
I'd love to. We've talked about it.
You could just like your favorite like actors and stuff.
Co-writer to the stars.
Yeah, you just get in touch with them. Just make a track with whoever you want.
Yeah.
And
we'll call Kevin next.
Yeah, I bet you Kevin Costner can sing.
Even if he can't, we'll just get him to talk.
Yeah. Do you watch Yellowstone? No, you don't.
No. It's really a thing good. Because my girlfriend, who's from Texas, her and her family love it. And they sat me down one night in Scotland to watch this. They were all excited.
Right.
But it was season 5, which in fairness is the wrong time to join any show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, episode 5, season 5, is not the right time to come in.
No, it was episode 1 of season 5, but even still, you know, I was making jokes and looking around and none of them were laughing. I was going, oh, wait, sees the irony in this.
You're not a talk during the episode guy, are you?
No, only if the show was shite.
I like to think you then showed them, give my headpiece. You're like, you just need to watch this.
Oh,
because it represents
if you're gonna
us.
Make me watch this, a load of white Americans talking about how their way of life is taken away from. Nobody sees the irony in this.
They're like, "Who's Uncle Andy?" You're just showing them that.
Oh, dear. Pain in the hole, gang.
Who have you? Because you've worked with so many like great artists, has anyone like made you a little bit stuck? You strike me as a guy who wouldn't get starstruck, but has anyone like? You've been in a room with someone, been in a studio with anyone that's like proper made you nervous?
No. Nervous. You know, the one time that I thought I want a selfie
today
was with Magic Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sports. If I was to see Ronnie O'Sullivan, I'd be like, someone introduce me. Somebody introduce me quick. Like, you know, someone like that.
Where did you meet Magic?
I was doing a benefit gig in the House of Blues in LA. I don't even know how I got the gig or what the deal was, but I was doing the music and he was the speaker. He was the guest speaker and I stood in line.
Right.
And got all tongue-tied and all. That's the only time I can think of even thinking I want to get a selfie with that person.
Yeah.
But no, not musically, no.
Right. Because when you do come home, obviously, like, it's such an event. How often are you home? Are you just home for shows, or do you spend time here?
I'm just home for show. I'm not even here.
Yeah.
No, I don't spend a lot of time here. I have 3 kids myself. Admittedly, one of them's grown up now. She's an adult, but I have 2 wee boys. So when I'm not working on the road, I'm usually at home kind of doing school runs and doing life.
Yeah.
You know.
The school run's fun.
It is, isn't it?
Do you know what I find? We do like a night old school dance soundtrack for the school run.
Oh yeah.
Me and my boys. Now it's only started, they've only started nursery like this week and that's how I started, just by chance. We were listening to Zombie Nation or Maniac 2000 or something,
right?
Because I was playing that on my way home from a show. So now every day we just like get a full rave on the way from the school.
I don't know either of those names you just mentioned.
You don't know Maniac 2000?
Well, maybe if I heard it, was it go like
by Mark McCabe? No, I don't want to. I'm not going to sing in front of you, but if I have to, no, shut up, Tony. No, I don't. I don't want to sing in front of you because
come on, sing.
No, because I don't have time to cut a record, and we're gonna have to. You're gonna listen to me sing, and then be like, "All right, we have to do a track." Whatever. With your Hollywood Town. I don't know. I'm just get spitballing, but no, you don't. Come on, you have no maniac too. Mike, if I play that, just play a second of that. My phone will we get copyright strike or anything? Okay.
Well, can we not cut it out? No, we can't edit this. No.
No, we can put it in. Maniac 2000 is like the dance anthem for like my generation. It's by a guy called Mark McCabe, who's a DJ from, I think Mark's from like Dundalk or somewhere.
Right.
And this is like the ultimate. Like when we were going to discos and stuff, Maniac 2000 just like Maniac 2000 did so much for the peace process because it was one of the only tracks that both sides were like, that's a belter. Like,
oh yeah,
that's a belter. Yeah, yeah.
Stop throwing stones for a wee second here. Yeah.
Maniac 2000. Here we go. If you don't know the first few bars, then you won't know it. It was recorded live. Here we go. I never thought I'd be doing this for you. Right, I'll fast forward it. She's a maniac on the floor. I think it's a rework of an old 80s song.
Yeah. She's a maniac on the floor. Yeah, that's an old song for.
So this is, honestly, get into it. Think about it for the school run.
Yeah, I'm writing that down as we speak.
But yeah, I guess you're just doing like real life things. Where do you live in?
I live in Scotland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, up in the or at the foot of the Highlands.
Yeah, because I see so many like live recordings you do from there, and
yeah.
So is that like the places you live? You live like proper like.
That's exactly where
I've been in Dingwall.
Dingwall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I did a me and a guy who plays for Northern Ireland went to look for the Loch Ness Monster for a video. The IFA, basically like Northern Ireland football team, went. We do social media videos for us, and I went, yeah. They went, do you want to just like interview the players about football? And I went, nah. Let's do stuff that's a bit wacky. And one of the guys, Liam Boyce, he's from West Belfast, he just signed for Ross County,
right,
up near Dingwall. And I said, why don't me and you go and look for the Loch Ness Monster and we'll film it. And we did that, and then I didn't really do any more videos for the IFA. It's not what they were after. They're like,
well,
we don't want
find
this.
It, so, you know what I mean?
We did.
Oh, did you?
We did, yeah. I don't want to spoil the video for you, but we found it.
Her name's Sheila.
It's in Dingwall. What do you do when you come home? Is there like a place you'll go to as like a ritual? Like, is there a restaurant you like or a...
The water, the tea, the water. Just walk down by the water, for sure. There's something about... Aberfeldy's great because it's just like... There's a glorious lack of human intent.
Right.
And it doesn't take long to get there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The bottom of my road, I'm by the river.
Mm-hmm.
And you may as well be a million miles away, you know. And that's very leveling, very settling, kind of. Like, you ever hear people talk about, you know, the silence is deafening?
Mm-hmm.
It can make you go a bit crazy, which is why people up there tend to be a bit feral.
Right, yeah,
you know, it can be wild up there, but...
I stopped on walks. If I go for, like, a walk, I stop listening to headphones.
Yeah.
And I enjoy the walk so much more.
Yeah.
Because I'm like listening. I'm listening to nothing.
That's the pace of life.
Yeah.
That I think we're meant to be used to. Now we're used to kind of 3 seconds of clip. A load of people died. A cat fell into a pool. There's those shoes I like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you... It must be great to have the following at home that you have, because there are so many people from here that are playing all around the world and have done that are maybe just, you know, bigger in another place and they maybe lose that connection from home. So coming home is just another stop on the tour. Whereas when you come home, everybody wants to go to it. It's, you know, a lot of people who say, I don't know what that saying is, as we've established, I don't really know words, but you're not a messiah in your homeland.
A prophet's never accepted in their own town, yeah.
Exactly. So because you know, left here like when you were young and went around the world, it must be great to have the following here that you have. Even though like you're not living here and
yeah.
because...
Well, this is still home. It still feels like coming home, you know what I mean?
Of course.
It's still kind of... And I do have to, like, I have to watch myself when I'm doing home gigs because I feel like I'm talking to mates all the time, even though it's probably a room full of people that I don't know, you know, for the most part. It feels like... I feel very comfortable, you know? Home gigs are very different to gigs anywhere else in the world.
What's your favourite Belfast venue? Everyone I know has a different answer, prefers a different...
Yeah, do you know what? I was asked this the other day, and like the first ones that come to mind were the Rotterdam Bar. I used to love playing the Rotterdam Bar. Just the, you know, low ceilings, you know, stinky, packed, sweaty.
Yes.
The Menagerie, I used to love playing the Menagerie.
Yeah, they'd stand up once. They tried to get a comedy club going once there.
Yeah.
Didn't really work. It's in the Holy... It's like in such a weird place that it's in the middle of the Holy Land.
That's right, yeah. Just the just off the Armour Road. With regards to kind of venues I played the last while, the Ulster Hall, you know, has to be in the conversation for sure. It's an iconic venue. It's killer sound.
First time I did Ulster Hall, I was a rabbit in the headlights.
Oh, yeah.
I was not ready for it. And I couldn't... I did the show, the hour-long show, in about 40 minutes. And then I had to just fill the rest. But I just... It hit me.
Yeah.
I thought I overthought it, and it was just too much. The second time I did it, I felt way more comfortable on stage. But the shock that I had the first time I did that, I also didn't know about when you deliver a joke somewhere that size, you got to let it sit before the laugh comes back.
Yeah.
Whereas you do a comedy club, like somewhere like the Rotterdam, not that they do comedy, but it's an instant response. So I blazed through it at the Ulster Hall. I was like, they're not laughing. And then it took me so long to realise, if you give it a second, the laugh comes back.
Yeah.
So I cringe when I look back at like the first gig that I did there. I would love it if you could move your Sunday night show to Monday. Because I'm doing Bangor on Sunday night.
Well, Sunday night I'll be back in Aberfeldy, so I don't
Oh, you're Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
Yeah.
Fuck. I'm in Newcastle. I'm in the Moy tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, up in Tyrone. I'm in the Moy tonight. And then Wall Garden in Bangor, which is one of my favourites of the year. Open House Festival.
Oh, yeah, that's a great Wall festival, Garden. Yeah.
Oh, so well ran. Crowds are brilliant. It's bring your own booze, but no one, like, they're, like, so civil. You know? And
very Bangor.
People bring your own, but it's like and they're like smuggled. I thought it was gear, but it's like cheese boards and all the bringing, you know? People bringing in brie, but I love gigging there.
Bangor, actually, the Wall Garden, but
because there isn't a regular comedy club in Bangor, such a big place, but there isn't a regular comedy club, so any opportunity. The Courthouse, have you done the Courthouse? They've just done it up.
I've been in it, but I haven't played in it.
I was there last week. It's great.
Yeah,
it's so good. Yeah, I'm gutted. I can't go to those shows, but Tony, what night are you going?
Tomorrow. Good man. Try not to fuck it up.
I really, really appreciate you coming on the podcast. I wanted to have you on the podcast for a long time, but obviously you're all over the world. I'm delighted that you've come on. It's great to meet you.
You too, brother.
What's your next like big project? Like, is there anything coming out? Obviously 10 years since the
Of Joy of Nothing, that's out now. I'm gonna release a single, a reimagined sort of version of Guiding Light that could be some guests on there is the plan. We've got his number, right?
Yeah.
7.
I'm not going to charge for that, just let you know.
Good man. Yeah.
Write that down.
We're not going to call either, so it's good. It's a win-win. got that coming out. And next year, I'm going to do some more. I'll go back in the studio. I've had this idea for a while of songs unsung, because I write with a lot of artists, and then those songs don't always make their records, but they're good songs, and they're just sat in a hard drive somewhere. I'm thinking, well, that's a waste of a song.
Oh, okay, right.
So I'm thinking, maybe I'll just release them then. If you aren't going to release them, can I? There's talk of doing that, and I've had my first outing as a producer for Bonnie Bishop. I've just produced her record. We just finished it. That'll be out next year. Other than that, we'll see. You know what me and my manager were talking about today?
What? What do we do?
Going on tour, and I used to bring a spoken word artist to open up for me, like Polar Bear Poet or...
Great. That was a big thing back in the day that they don't do anymore.
Yeah, right.
You know, like poets would open for bands. Yeah. Things like that.
Well, the idea of going with a comedian.
Where are we going?
I don't know. Where do you want to go? Everywhere. Nashville? You said you want to go to Nashville. You've never been.
Right enough. Can we do a show in Nashville?
Let's do it.
I would love that.
Let's do it.
No, I wouldn't charge for music, but for comedy, I would need something like. Oh, yeah. I need something like.
Yeah.
Even like my dinner or something would be class.
Aye, listen, we'll get you a vanilla coffee and some Twinkies. You'll be fine.
Here, that'd be really good.
Yeah.
I would love that. I'll do 15 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, and I'll do 10.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll do that. Yeah. When? What dates do? That's for. Verbal contract. Foy, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate
Thank you.
It. Thanks a million. Sipper, God love you. If you've made it all the way through this episode, that means you love Tea With Me, you love this podcast, or it means like you've drifted off and you've just left this on and play. Either way, what you need to do is head over to our Patreon. If you enjoy the podcast and you want more tea, that's where you go. We do a bonus episode called The Special Brew every Monday and a live stream podcast every Friday with some of your favorite comedians. You can chat, interact, ask questions. When we announce live podcasts, you get early access to tickets with a little bit of a discount on there. And there is so much more. You can go back and watch, I think, nearly 1,000 hours of content. Tea With Me, Patreon, which is patreon.com/teawithmepodcast. The link is in the description. I'll see you there.